Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to probably what is the last of the 2016 summer episodes of the Chicago Bulls. By the next time you hear us, we should have a hell of a lot to talk about because training camp's starting right around the corner. But we do have a lot to talk about today because you had two huge retirements that just happened probably today. But before we get going here, Freddie, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, Mark. It's awesome to be back together, like the Beatles reunion tour. It's fantastic.
You see that movie, by the way? You see that new Beatles movie?
I did. I heard nothing but fantastic things about it, and I did not get to see it. It seemed like it was only out, like, for one day.
But it's on Hulu. It's on Hulu.
Yeah, but
let's see it on
Hulu. Can you watch it for free on Hulu, or do you got to be a paid
Hulu? It's free on Hulu.
Oh, my gosh. I had no idea. Well, that's good news. Well, I'll get home and watch it this weekend. I've been watching a lot of old movies, like, or not old, but, you know, relatively big movies that came out within the last 3 years. I just saw, for the first time on HBO, I saw Revenant. Did you see that movie?
Yeah, man. I thought it was okay.
Shave off an hour. That was one of the best movies I've ever seen. I've heard so many people give that same review. Like, I'd see it once. I never want to see it again. I thought it was one of the best movies I've ever seen. I was blown away.
The best you've ever seen.
It was incredibly filmed. The film was incredible how it was actually the camera work on it. I mean, it was really, I thought, groundbreaking in a way. I don't think I've ever seen a movie film like that. It was really well done. I thought it was crazy done.
Great director. My issue is that you can only sit in the wilderness for so goddamn long. And it's just, I get it, he's in the wilderness, but, like, put this, that director had done Birdman the year before. I thought Birdman was four times as good, but go on.
I never saw Birdman.
Birdman's way better.
All right, spoiler alert, anybody who hasn't seen it, you know, probably skip a minute ahead for here, but I thought the plot was fantastic. You go right into the bear attack, you go right into a, you know, personal drama between Bane and his son, right? I mean, I just thought that it was fantastic. Just the concept too of should I die for my son's sake? And that there's a lot of controversy around that too, whether or not he meant to. Anybody know the scene I'm talking about? Blink, and it's all over, right? You remember that?
Yes, the scenes where there was where people were talking, I love. My only beef for I liked the movie. It's that you had this huge gap in the middle where he was just in the wilderness alone forever. And it went on forever. And it's just like, we get it.
I thought it was phenomenal. I didn't think there was
a lot of... Well, go see Birdman. If you like that, go see Birdman. Same director.
Okay.
And
yeah, so
very well done.
The Beatles movie I absolutely want to see. I saw an interview with Ron Howard and McCartney and Ringo at Abbey Road, and it just made me want to run out and see it immediately. So you've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, my personal, from a Beatles fan standpoint, if you have seen the anthologies or if you've read books on the Beatles, there's not a lot in this movie that I feel, it's called 8 Days a Week, by the way, if anybody's a Beatles fan, you want to go see it, it's on Hulu. I feel like the movie itself did not give really any crazy revelations. However, it did give a very in-depth, there were two things that I got out of it that I really enjoyed, which was just how close the Beatles were, especially during this period, how close they were together, but also exactly how crazy the mayhem was. Because to me, it was just thousands and thousands, tens and thousands, hundreds of thousands of women screaming. It was more than that. I mean, it was a violent atmosphere. They had reason to be scared. And, you know, that aspect of it, I didn't quite realize. There's definitely insight that you'll get that you haven't seen before, but I did feel like 90% of it is things that I've read before. I knew, you know, I've seen footage I've seen before. One of the cool scenes, though, They interviewed Sigourney Weaver. She's talking about, like, when she went to a Beatles concert, how crazy it was. And they cut to a video, and it's Sigourney Weaver at a Beatles concert in, like, the 60s. Pretty crazy.
Well, I heard Phil Collins is actually in A Hard Day's Night as a youngster.
He is, at the end of the movie.
I don't think there's anything that can compare to that. You know, it just doesn't seem like there's a band that goes out there now, and the girls are just... I mean, Justin Bieber, I guess, would probably...
No.
But not to that level. I'm to the level
I had
where
this debate at work today, and somebody was trying
screaming.
To say Hanson. And I'm like,
oh,
no.
Are you kidding?
Like, it wasn't like mayhem. Look, I saw NSYNC
what moron
in concert. When in, obviously, NSYNC broke up when they were at their peak. So I saw NSYNC in concert. And I would say that in terms of, like, boys, like, the only band that I think, the only thing that could come close in our lifetimes where people were, like, fainting and stuff was Michael Jackson. Besides that, you haven't had that. Like, people don't get that crazy. Like, and even this, you see this, and it's like, it ain't that crazy. Teenage girls rioting, like, it ain't that crazy. It's never been that crazy. It's just the Beatles. And God bless them. And you know, another thing that it showed, which was really interesting, to me, you know, all this stuff, hindsight, I'm younger than the Beatles, but they got perspectives of people when they first heard Rubber Soul and Revolver, which are very different than the rest of their albums up to that point. And that was really interesting because people didn't like it. People thought the Beatles had just like, where the hell is this band going? And it's just, that was really, I had never even thought of that. It was like, what would Tomorrow Never Knows sound like if I just listened to A Hard Day's Night or Help or whatever had come out right before it? How would that sound, you know? And I would be boring.
That's a great point.
Right now.
That's a
Skip
fantastic
5 minutes
point.
Ahead, fans, if you're bored right now.
Yeah. We'll get into Bulls in about 5 more minutes. There's another point I want to make, too. I know when you hear the 63, you know, Beatles recording of She Loves You and I Want to Hold Your Hand, it sounds, you know, so lame, but not necessarily lame. I still think the songwriting holds up today. But, you know, the sound, right, is not anything revolutionary that you would consider revolutionary. But at that time, it absolutely was. It was an extremely hard, different sound. Listen to the recordings of bands that came out before them. They were really kind of like on the edge as far as sonically. You know, a lot harder, a lot more driving than anything that came at that time. And I think that's something that you kind of miss. Even Elvis, who was, even the Sun Sessions, which are phenomenal. If you never heard the Elvis Sun Sessions, That's All Right Mama, Blue Moon of Kentucky, go to YouTube now, Google it, and listen to it. And even today, that music holds up. But those songs weren't driving, weren't hard backbeat, weren't really revolutionary as I think the Beatles songs were and their covers on those albums that, you know, really identified the British invasion. So,
And, I mean, when you talk revolutionary, yes, obviously their first chunk was revolutionary, but they literally took music into a completely different direction when they did Rubber Soul. It was just like, we're just taking a left turn. And we're going to do whatever the hell we want. And
yeah, but they were all
they were just trying
greatly by Bob Dylan. They were influenced by folk music. They were influenced by Bob Dylan. They were influenced by Pet Sounds.
Hey, dude, Bob Dylan
Boys.
Did not influence Tomorrow Never Knows. Like, like Bob Dylan was folky.
Yeah, that's
they
a good
started,
point.
The Beatles experimented with sounds. They did weird sounds, and they tried different things that just were just weird. And
I can't recall.
Today,
Pet Sounds came before or after Rubber Soul?
It came after Rubber Soul. That was around Sgt. Pepper. I think it actually came out after Sgt. Pepper.
No, it did not. We'll have to look at the timeline and chronology here.
The Beach Boys are overrated. And Pet Sounds is
not
anything.
Overrated.
Doesn't hold anything. By the way, did you see that Beach Boys movie? The movie, what's it, the one with John Cusack. Did you see that movie?
Oh, I heard about it. I heard it's phenomenal.
Oh, my God. What's that called again? That is one of the best movies I've ever seen. It is amazing. And I'm not a huge Beach Boys fan. That movie is amazing. What is it called? It's John Cusack.
Yeah. We'll get it for the listeners on the next show. I know exactly what you're talking
it's
about, too.
It's so,
or Soldiers
so
or
good.
Something in, what was it called? Yeah. I heard great stuff about it. I'm definitely going to see it. I thought it was based on
my God.
Trial album. All right, maybe I'm wrong on that. But
that movie's going to...
Oh, no, Villains.
You
Heroes and Villains. Is that it? Heroes and Villains?
No, it's not Heroes and Villains. It's, I'll look at it.
Why don't you Google it up while I'm...
This
one
movie
discussion.
Is... Yes.
One more discussion I want to bring up, because you sent me an interesting article about Use Your Illusion, the 25th anniversary of those albums coming out. I cannot believe it's 25 years already. I was a freshman in college when those albums came out, I think in October, November of 1991. And I realize now when I was reading that article and also just reminiscing on when that album came out, the millennials and the people who are listening to this podcast will have no idea, like, what that experience was like, where people would actually wait up till midnight and the album would go on sale at midnight. And then people would buy it and race home and listen to it. And that was the last album I really remember that happening for. Do you recall this? Did you get it the night it came out? Do you remember? How old were you?
No, I was like nine.
Nine, okay. So we walked at U of I. We walked to the records. I can't remember what it was at U of I, the famous one on Green Street. And
but I know what you're talking about.
We actually waited for it to come out. And I bought both albums. And then we ran home and you know, a couple of my buddies, and we listened to all the Guns N' Roses music. Now, the anticipation for that album was, I can't even describe it, because people did hear a few songs off that album, like Civil War had come out, I think, about a year before, or people had heard it about a year before. To me, that's one of the best Guns N' Roses songs. So you kind of saw the band, you know, progressing from what they were, what they had done on Appetite for Destruction, and people are just, you know, dying to listen to that record. Now, overall, looking back, I mean, I remember loving it overall, but I agree with you. We had this conversation offline. That should have been one album. There are too many throwaway songs. You know, it should have been one great album, and we could have easily done something, you know, for that. Or they should have come out with that. But I encourage you to check out that article on Rolling Stone that you had sent me. Pretty good stuff.
I agree with you.
Are you in the bathroom? What's going on over there?
No, I'm listening to you right now, Freddie. I'm moving around. I got headphones on. I'm about to get in the car. I'm actually heading up to Chicago.
Oh, good. All right, so let's talk Bulls. What do you think?
Well, one more thing I want to say about rock and roll. Is that I told you right before we started the show is that I'm going to this Desert Trip concert out in a month out in Indio, California, the Rolling Stones, Paul McCartney. I mean, some of our favorites, The Who, Roger Waters, Bob Dylan, Neil Young. And I just want to say, obviously, you know, it's people ask me, they're like, why are you seeing these bands? They're 75 years old, whatever.
Who asked you?
And to me, a lot of people. To me, because of these bands, like, you know, Stones, when I saw them last time, were amazing. Even though Keith's a little off, it's like, if, you know, you're a fan, you're into it, like, you don't notice, because Nick is so on, you don't even notice. But, like, The Who, they've been kind of shitty for a while. It's just like, it is what it is. But this is kind of the end of this era. And we are, you know, I knew as a kid when I was growing up and I was seeing the Stones, when I saw Bridges of Babylon in 97 and all the Stones shows I saw, frankly, after that, over the next 10 years, I knew that this was something that was going to be, you know, my 30s, close to 40, that this would be the end. And, you know, I'm blessed. And for anyone that doesn't know these bands that we talk about, go out, listen to some of these records, email us, we'd be happy to share with you some of the great albums and the way to start. You know, this music changed my life. And
I mean, if you haven't listened to The Who, or you have no
fingers.
Idea, if you're 16, 17, 18, and you don't know what we're talking about, I still remember, Mark, when I was 16, in the late 80s, all the bands were the heavy metal bands, which I liked a few of them. I love Guns N' Roses. I love Metallica. I liked a lot of those bands, but I was the only guy really getting into the Beatles, really listening to a lot of 60s music, late to the Byrds. There's so much great music to discover that people now, I don't even think, really even know exists.
Know about.
You mentioned Who's Next. I think it's a fantastic
place to start. One of the best albums ever.
Oh, it's just incredible. Going Mobile, one of my favorite songs of all time.
Behind Blue Eyes.
Behind Blue Eyes is a great song.
Getting in Tune.
Incredible. Fantastic. Won't Get Fooled Again on there?
Which one?
Won't Get Fooled Again?
Yeah. It's just
that's one of the great songs of all time. Right? I mean, so that album is incredible. Listen, if you want to hear really great guitar work on an acoustic guitar, and Townsend is one of the best of all time, listen to Going Mobile. And the drums. Oh, my God. What a band that band. As far as a bass, drummer, guitarist, they're right there with Zeppelin as far as talent. Talented musicians all thrown together in one band. Incredible stuff.
Sure. Sure.
So we're most excited about
seeing
Waters.
Waters, you know what? This is going to be my 11th Rolling Stone show. And I'm still the most excited. I mean, they're my favorite band in the world. My dog's name is Jagger. I'm actually getting a Rolling Stone tattoo on Sunday. That I've been planning for years, but it's finally coming together on Sunday. But it's the Rolling Stones and then Paul McCartney. I mean, Paul. But it's just, it's sad, because I realized this day was going to come at some point, but I feel like this, to me, is this last hurrah, kind of these bands. And because The Who, in my opinion, I'm just going to get really drunk before the show and just enjoy it because of the music. I know The Who did not perform anymore the way that they were, even when I saw them 10 years ago. They've dropped. But, like, I saw the Stones last year, and they were still great. I know Paul McCartney is still... Paul's kind of at the apex of his performing, frankly. Paul didn't perform throughout a lot of his career. Paul was not performing, and now he's been performing live since, like, the late 90s, but it's really been the last few years where he's really picked up the performing.
On a regular basis.
And I,
his voice is failing him though now.
He's ever played. These are the best set lists, in my opinion. He plays 35 songs a night, and he plays... Just he plays the best songs. I mean, look at the set list. If you have a chance, Fred, look at the set list from this tour. He just plays. He plays great set lists, and especially the Beatles songs. He really pulls out songs that you wouldn't necessarily expect, and that's what you got to respect. I mean, I get with Wings. Unless you're a diehard Wings fan, you can't start pulling out these cuts of Wings. People aren't going to know what the hell they are. But the Beatles, you can't. Like, the Beatles are weird. They don't like they're the biggest band ever, but the Beatles don't have like they have a handful of hits. But they don't really have, like, it's like every song's a hit. It's like, what's really a deep cut for the
Beatles?
Well,
no, they do. And I'll give you an example. I was listening to Pandora the other day, and I was listening to Pandora, and Fixing the Hole came on, which is a song off of Sgt. Pepper. And that's nowhere, I rarely ever, I don't think I've ever heard that song on the radio. But that's a great example of what I'm trying to say, where I think that, to me, Lovely Rita, off the same album, off of Sgt. Pepper, is one of the best songs you'll ever hear, and you rarely ever hear it on the radio. Listen to Lovely Rita. Listen to the bass line on Lovely Rita, how incredibly intricate, and it's just a fantastic work. I mean, it's that Paul, Fixing the Holes, Paul, good stuff. Are you at a toll booth? What in the world is going on here?
Well, I'll pick you up. Yeah, I've been on headphones. I've been on Bluetooth the whole time, but now I'm going to... Here. Do you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
There you go. Now I'm on the full thing. I've been kind of moving around. I mean, this is unfortunately, Fred,
well,
as our fans need to know, our schedules have kind of been all over the place. It's been difficult to do these, so it's like we got to take the time that we can. And now, unfortunately, I'm able to talk on the phone. And you know what? To any of our fans, the fact is, it's difficult to talk about stuff over the summer. There's not a ton of stuff to talk about, and. You know, at the end of the day, we do get feedback from our fans that do enjoy hearing about the weird interests that Fred and I have. So rather than start a whole new podcast where we talk about Guns N' Roses for 5 minutes, we like to throw it into the bullseyes. But you're right. Let's talk about the Bulls. Let me talk right now really quickly. You have Kevin Garnett today is retiring, and Chris Bosh is not being cleared to play because of blood clots, so he's going to miss... This is probably it for Chris Bosh. Where do you what are their careers? What happens to these guys? Garnett's a Hall of Famer, right?
I think they're both Hall of Famers, to be clear.
That's what I would think. Why is Bosh a Hall of Famer? But I feel like he is. But why is he?
Well, he's got two titles. He's part of the big three, and whatever we felt about them getting together, there's no doubt that basketball history will look back at the Miami Heat in that era and say that was one of the best teams of all time. They went to four finals, I mean, in a row. Kind of hard to...
Did he earn it without LeBron? Did he earn it? Let's say he never wins a title. Say he never plays with the Heat. Is Chris Bosh a Hall of Famer? It's saying that considering it's like that he does the same numbers. Let's say he does the same thing that he... Because obviously his numbers went down in Miami when he was playing with LeBron. So let's say that he kept doing what he was doing in Toronto, which you could tell last year. When he came back last year, he was awesome. He was amazing until he went out with blood clots last year. Clearly, Chris Bosh was kind of the odd man out with the big three in terms of the guy that had to take the most sacrifices. Let's say Chris Bosh going into Miami, LeBron never comes, but whatever his career is. He never got to play with LeBron. He never gets to win those titles, but he continued to do Chris Bosh numbers from what he was doing when he went over there, and what he did, frankly, last year, prior to getting the blood clot, is he a Hall of Famer?
Championship. Are you saying with no championship, you're just saying, let's say he just stayed in Toronto?
Well, I don't believe that Chris Bosh, without LeBron James, would ever have won a title. He's not good enough, right?
Agreed. I agree 100%. And if he doesn't win those titles, then no, I don't think he'd be a Hall of Famer. I think he'd be a great... great player, considered one of the best. I don't think he would have been a Hall of Famer. When you had the two titles and he was part of one of the best teams of all time, there's no doubt he's in the Hall of Fame. I can't believe there's an argument. Like, I understand.
Well, that's my thing, though, is that the two titles, are because you had this great player. Like, if Al Jefferson played on the Miami Heat during those years, they probably still would have won those titles. So the question is, Chris Bosh was clearly the third best player on those teams. If we are talking about, and I agree with you, I'm sure that he will get into the Hall of Fame, but is he deserving of the Hall of Fame considering that during the years that he won those finals, he was the third man on those teams, man. He was not, he had a reduced role. It was really, you really realize how great he was when LeBron left.
Mark, it doesn't matter. He played on a team with the best player in the league. So, yes, he wasn't the best player on the team because he played with the team. He played on a team with the best player in the league, and Wade, for two of those years, was probably a top five player in the league, at least top 10.
No way.
Bosh has always been.
I don't believe. I do not believe that Wade was top Wade any of the years that they won.
2010, Wayne Wade was absolutely a top 10 player. It's not like he was. In fact, he was the alpha on that 2010 team. 2010 team that lost to the Mavericks. It was LeBron who faded in the playoffs. There's no doubt he was. I still
in the playoffs, but LeBron was still the best player on the team throughout the year.
In 2010-11, it was a lot closer than you think, and I'd say Wade was leader, and people forget how good Wade was defensively, especially in those years. 2010, LeBron and him absolutely shut down Rose, who was at his peak skill level in those playoffs. That's why we lost those playoffs, because those two double-teamed him, and ended in scoring. Or
yeah, but the Bulls didn't have options. They just had Rose.
Well, right.
They didn't have other people. They had no one else.
Was a good three-point shooter who Tibbs had on the bench, and they had nothing else. I agree. But my point
clearly is, we were not as deep as the Heat because we did not have. You could say we had the bench mob, but we did. We clearly did not have the scoring power of the Heat. That, I don't like to use us as the barometer of what they dealt with. I mean, obviously beating Dallas that particular year was a big deal. But beating the Bulls, it's like, I mean, Rose is Rose. That was it, man. I mean, you didn't have anything else. You were the bench mob. Great.
Rose was insane. He was the MVP that year. People forget
that. But the team that surrounded him was not that great. You had a great bench in terms of benches, but you really didn't have a second-tier guy. Like, Noah wasn't Noah at that point.
You had Lou Alden playing close to an all-star level. You had Noah, who was one... All right, we're rewriting history here.
Were the Chicago Bulls that year a great team? Were they a great team?
Yes, they were great because defensively they had two of the top five interior defenders in the league in a young Taj Gibson and a young Joakim Noah. 2010 and 11, those guys were as good as it gets defensively on the inside. And we all know in order to win a championship, you better have a guy who's going to rebound the ball. And play
but you didn't have offense. You had no offense.
You had Lou Alden.
Besides Rose.
The best three-point shooter in basketball. It wasn't my fault that Tibbs chose to sit him for defensive purposes because that's all he could understand when we needed. If you go back and watch those games, we blew them out in one game. Those other four games were a lot closer than people recall. In fact, in game five, we blew a double-digit lead with 4 minutes left. Why? Because Tibbs refused to go offense. They scored every time down, and when the Heat get on a roll like that, you better, sure as heck, combat that team with offense. And he kept Korver and his ass and planted on the bench where you can't hit threes. So that's why we lost that series. I still feel if he would have played Korver more in the fourth quarter, and yes, he would have given up some baskets. But guess what? With your the greatest defensive team in the league isn't going to stop LeBron and Wade when they get it going, and that's exactly what happened. So all the defense.
But I ask you this, Fred. I ask you this. You saw, I mean, the reason, honestly, this goes into something I wanted to talk about. You see Derrick Rose come out the other day, says the team that he's playing on now is the best team he's ever played for, and I agree it's complete ridiculousness, but the fact is it makes you think. How good, in my opinion, if you're asking me, talent-wise, what was the best Bulls team that Derrick Rose played on? It was the team 2 years ago that made it to the semifinals.
No.
I mean, with
no
Paul Gasol?
The 2011-2012 Bulls.
So are you telling me
as the
because he had no, he had nobody like Butler. He had nobody like Butler back then. So are you telling me that Derrick Rose was so good that the fact that you had Pau Gasol and Jimmy Butler, who are all stars those years, that that negates that you're it's still the best team that the Bulls had, despite the fact that you had nobody else that was even close to that level.
That's not true. First of all, Kyle Korver made an all-star team after he left the Bulls, okay?
Yes, but not when he was on the Bulls.
It's not my fault Tibbs couldn't figure out how valuable he was, that he kept his ass on the bench for every first quarter.
But he's not athletic. He can't defend.
He started for Atlanta the minute he left and immediately became one of the best shooting guards in the league. So I want to look. I want to point to something. That team, the 2011-12 team, at shooting guard had the following options: Rip Hamilton, albeit near the end of his career, but still a upgrade, you know, on a lot of shooting guards in the league. He had Luol Deng, who provides you with some time at the shooting guard position. He had Ronnie Brewer, elite defensively, and he had Kyle Korver and Jimmy Butler. I made this case before. You could go 20 years in either direction and find a deeper team at shooting guard than Kyle Korver, Rip Hamilton, and Jimmy Butler. Can you find one? I can't. I can't. But it's not.
I agree with you, but they obviously, they never finished. My question to you, Fred, is this. What was the best team that Derrick Rose played on?
Yes.
What was the best team?
It's that 2011-12 team. Had Noah at his peak, had, well, not at his peak, but 1 year before his peak, before he won, almost won the MVP. They had Taj Gibson.
He came out of nowhere. He came out of nowhere.
Taj Gibson.
You never saw it coming.
Was O'Meara on that team? I can't recall.
Yes. O'Meara was on the team, yeah.
Okay, so you had, yes, that's correct, because O'Meara.
You're talking about the Eastern Conference Finals team, right?
That's the team. I'm talking about the team that went after Derrick Torres' ACL in the first round of playoffs. That team was the number one seed, Mark. I really believe that team would have won it all. That was the team that added Rip Hamilton. That
yeah, okay, had, okay. I see
that,
what you're
saying. Jimmy Butler was a rookie on that team. Jimmy Butler wasn't on 2010-11 team. He was on that team, the 2011-12 team. And, you know, he hardly played, but when he did get a chance.
Rip didn't do anything on that team, though. Rip didn't do anything.
Because he didn't play. He never played him down the stretch. I'm not a Rip fan. He was injured a lot. He didn't need him until the playoffs. He had Korver, if you recall, that was the strike-shortened season. That was the season when you had game after game after game, and Tibbs is still running dang out there to lead the league in minutes. Absolutely inexcusable. 100% inexcusable and beyond stupid. And then Dang hurt his wrist during that season in a game where they're up 20 against Charlotte. He's running around in the fourth quarter. Nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wanted to blame Tibbs for it, but it happened. And now Dang, to his credit, chose not to get surgery, fought through it, played the whole season. But, again, that was another example of Tibbs running his players ragged when there was no need to in that season.
Sure. I still think, I mean, personally, I feel like the team 2 years ago was the best team that Derrick Rose ever played on overall, because I'm including Derrick Rose, too, obviously. And I get it. Derrick Rose is not – it means a lot, obviously, in the NBA. It means a lot when you've got a guy that is a transcendent superstar, which Rose was for a season. But I would still take the team that we had 2 years ago. But, I mean, if Pau Gasol didn't get injured, we might have beaten Cleveland. I truly believe we might have beaten Cleveland. I truly
Maybe.
Believe it.
No, I don't think we would have been. I think there was about a 20% chance of that happening.
We had a 2-1 lead in the series.
Yeah,
it's got to mean something.
Very close. You make a good point. I mean, game four was very close, and we didn't have them. I mean, you make a good point. But then again, Cleveland didn't have a lot of guys in that series.
Fine.
So, and Cleveland didn't win.
Yeah, but also though, the only team you had to deal with was Miami. When Rose was at his peak, the only team that you had to deal with was Miami. You had a lot of teams in the East. That, look at now. I mean, look at the ESPN power rankings came out today, and I'd love to talk about those in a minute. But once you get past the top three teams in the West, it's all Eastern Conference teams.
Indiana and Boston both had good teams in 2010-11. I think Indiana took Miami to seven games in one of those finals. you know, so it wasn't as bad as you think. Yeah, true. Miami was clearly ahead of everyone else, but I do recall, I think Boston also took Miami to 7 games. I might have been wrong on that. I don't recall for certain. Any way you look at it, Rose's statement is, to me, ridiculous, because I do feel that team is probably pretty close to 2014-15 goals, but they're not better than 2011-12 team. I mean, that team was extremely deep, had extremely specialized weapons, and, you know, Porzingis is probably, you know, he's the youngest guy they have. He's the only guy in the Knicks, I think, that's probably in his prime or coming up to his prime. Everybody else is past their prime.
Do the Knicks make the playoffs this year?
I think they will now that Miami has clearly fallen out. So one team has fallen out. Got to be Miami. Who else was in the playoffs last year? Let's think of a team that made the playoffs last year that potentially
Well, the Bulls didn't make do the Bulls make the playoffs?
I think they will. I mean, they were 42-40 last year, and everything possible went wrong as far as injuries. I think it's impossible to have as many injuries as they did last year. And I think there's been a few articles finally to bring some sanity to these arguments that, you know, the team is lacking a little bit in outside shooting. Yes, but I think that's mitigated by the fact they're going to be much better at stealing the ball. And the fact that Rondo and Wade bring a lot more steals, I think they're going to still creating turnovers. And I think they're going to be much better at getting to the line, no doubt about that, because Wade is one of the top players in the league at getting to the line. Butler is too. And, you know, just bringing that player in, a player of Wade's caliber, is going to help with that effort.
So I'm reading Mark Stein's rankings, ESPN Mark Stein's rankings. To end last season, the Bulls were 19th. Today, they ranked us 18th. Now, my personal belief, that's ridiculous. I mean, the Bulls fell apart last year, and you had all these injuries, and the Bulls fell apart. You cannot tell me. Rose played well at the end of last year, but then you had Butler who was out. I mean, Noah barely even played. He played like 10 games last year. He barely even played. I get the fact that we can't shoot threes. But I truly believe, like, look, with Dwayne Wade, who had the best season he's had in 5 years last year, Rajon Rondo, who had a great season last year, and everybody discounts Rajon Rondo, whatever, Rose wasn't that great last year. He wasn't that great, even no matter how good he played. He was never that great. And then Jimmy was injured for, like, you know, whatever, the you know, various parts of the season. This team, to me, is far more exciting. In hindsight, obviously going into last season, I had high hopes. I was hoping. I mean, obviously, people thought we were the second best team in the league 2 years ago. You know, it's just, you know, injuries and whatnot that made us. Everybody thought 2 years ago that us in Cleveland were whoever wins that is going to go to the final.
Well,
last
it's
year,
but we still lost a player of Gasol's caliber, and I know half the audience is probably laughing right now, but...
You're right, you're right.
I clearly saw he was oil for the offense when it worked right. He was very underrated as a rebounder and underrated as a player overall. Excellent passer, he got to the line, he was a really important player for the Bulls the last 2 years. So you lose a guy like that, but you do replace him with a great player in Wade, who, you know, again, injury-prone, you know, there's issues with him too, but... Big picture, though, I do think Rondo's a better fit than Rose. People always are talking about the three-point shooting. Rondo, for the last year and a half, has been a much, much better three-pointer than Derrick Rose.
Right.
He also facilitates better than Derrick Rose. He's a pass-first guard as opposed to a shoot-first guard. And when you're playing next to Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade, Rondo's a better fit next to those two guys. I know we don't want to...
And we have three-point shooters on our team. I mean, you have Nico. You've got Dougie McBuckets. You've got three-point shooters on this team.
Yeah, but I do also understand. Yeah, and big picture, we were second in the league in three-point shooting last year. So where did it get us? You know, as far as percentage goes, where did it get us? You still got to be able to do other things to win. And I keep on pointing to Oklahoma City. I know that everybody's laughing, too, because they had two of the best players in the league. But they didn't have any three-point shooters. Definitely none better than Doug McDermott. I don't think they had anyone who had a higher percentage that took a considerable amount of shots than Nico did last year. had they won a ton of games because they got to the line a ton. And I think we have two superstars in Butler and Wade. They're going to get to the line a lot, and I think we're going to surprise a lot of people. Now, it could all go...
That's what I think.
Could go all south. I mean,
Agreed.
If Wade gets injured and Butler gets injured, this is going to be a horrific year. And that's my point. Well, then you rebuild. You trade Wade. You trade Rondo. You make moves. They're not on attractive contracts. They're easily tradable.
Yeah, no risk contracts. Rondo's on a one-year deal. Wade's on a two-year deal.
It's essentially a one-year
deal. Is there a team option?
I think he's got the option, but
He's not. He won't take the out. So if he's got the out, it's whatever the contract is.
Why would
if we got the out? Because if he doesn't play great, I get it. If he plays really well and the team sucks, he might leave. But if he plays, if he's not playing well, he's going to take it. Why wouldn't he? He's only 34.
Well, 34 is old for a perimeter player.
It's old, but it's not dead. I'm done. I mean, Kobe Plato was, 36, 37? I would believe Wade... I mean, I do believe that Wade will finish his contract.
I agree with you to the extent that I feel he's still playing. There's no doubt he is playing at a high enough level. Maybe not compared to how he used to play, but he's still a talented player. He's still a top 30 player in the NBA. That if he remains healthy like he did last year and they limit his minutes and bring him on right, the team's going to be dangerous. And it's going to be, I think Vegas has him at 38.5 wins for the season. I think
the Bulls?
Yes, I definitely take the over on that bet.
Let me ask you this. Are the Bulls better this year than they were last year?
I think last year's team, without injuries, might have been a little bit better. But we were so decimated by injuries last year that, we were never really able to see. Like I said, on January 9th, we were 22-12. Everybody started falling apart at that point. So I think it's really hard to judge last year's team. With all those issues, with all the problems we had, the team still was 42-40.
That's what I'm saying. We won 42 games. Joakim Noah, look, we're better at center. Robin Lopez, there's no question in my mind that Robin Lopez is better than Joakim Noah was last year. And I would say even if Joakim didn't get injured, the player that Joakim was, going up into that, if he didn't get injured, Robin Lopez is still better. Now, Joakim got injured, so it's not even close. So you take that out of the water. Obviously, in my opinion, power forward, obviously, Pau Gasol is a very good player. He played very well for us. He made the All-Star team last year. I felt Nico, it kind of depends on that, because Nico had a great last 3 months of the season last year. Do I think that he could make up for those numbers? Absolutely, especially because, he can really score in bunches. And he did that at the end of last year. A lot of people don't remember it because the team was terrible. Fine. The backcourt, what would I take? There's no question. I complained about Mike Dunleavy at that position being our starting power or small forward for 2 years now. Not that because of the fact that he wasn't even ready to play last year and that we were still banking on him. We were gluing, whoever fits today's game until he comes back when he was already going to miss half the goddamn season. Our backcourt now, with Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, and Rajon Rondo, in my opinion, I would take that any day over Dunleavy, Rose, and Butler, who they were last year. So the question really comes on, is losing Pau Gasol, which nobody's talking about. Nobody's talking about the fact that we lost Gasol, though people are giving credit to the Spurs for getting Pau Gasol.
You and me were
nobody's talking about losing him.
You and me were his only fans who really realized, the value he brought to the team. Everybody just thought he was, horrible. It's one of the most confounding things I've ever seen as a Bulls fan, that people didn't really respect or appreciate what he brought. I mean, he actually drew double teams in the Milwaukee playoff series last year. And
it's up there with us as fans, as the Bulls fans not respecting Ben Gordon. It's one of those things where it's just like, are you watching these games? We fell apart. We could have beaten Cleveland 2 years ago if Pau Gasol didn't go down. Pau Gasol's going down ended the series where it wasn't even close. We still won two games. But, we lost.
In general, dislike offensive-minded players. I've labored on this point.
Sure.
Ad nauseum. They love the Heinrichs and Noahs, and they hate the Gordons and you know, and Pau Gasols. It's just, it's sad but true. But, you know, overall, I just can't wait. It's almost here, man. It's almost here.
I know.
I cannot think and wait. And I'm so glad they've taken this direction because it's going to be freaking awesome and exciting no matter what happens.
I agree. I'm so excited for the season. I'm excited. I'm excited for the season to start. If you did not get Dwayne Wade, I would not be excited for this at all. Because you still would have Rondo and Butler. And if you did that, you know you would not suck enough to be getting a top-tier pick.
Oh.
I think there is a chance that we can be really competitive. And if you're going to ask me for what look, Mark Stein's power rankings came out there, ranked 18th. There was above us in our conference was the Cavaliers, the Pistons, the Raptors. The only team that wasn't above us, the Bucks were not above us. They were like one spot below. Even with the Bucks were only one spot below with Chris Middleton being injured. He's missing 70 games. And yet we were only one spot below. People are completely overlooking the Bulls, and I think that's a major mistake. Wade had a great year last year. So did Rondo. Rondo was great last year.
At its height, I'm telling you right now, I think at its height, or, you know, if this team really fulfills its everything, all the talent, and fulfills what it can be, its capabilities, I think it'd be the second best team in the East. I think it could put the fear of God into the Cavs. Cavs are clearly
that's what
better.
I want.
I'm not saying they're going to beat them, but. What's wrong with that? Is that really so bad? That's my biggest issue with the fan base in general. Is they'd rather, you know, rebuild. A lot of these people, they have no idea how much rebuilding sucks. They have no idea that it's promised to no one. I've been through that road. They don't remember that. They don't remember 99 through 2003. What kind of hell
look at the Sixers. Look at the teams that are trying to rebuild. Look at the Nuggets. They're not getting it's impossible. And my question is, at the end of the day, am I more excited going into this season? Because not going into last season, I obviously thought, you know, that things could be different. But it's like, am I happy about the direction that we took? Absolutely. I mean, do I think that we could be one of the better teams in the East? Yes. Everybody's counting us out. And I want to say this to our fans who are listening to this show right now. Record this show. This show. Record it now. The season hasn't even started yet. And I'm telling you that the Chicago Bulls will be at least one of the top four best teams in the East. And everyone is putting us Would you put your money on that? Who will be a top four team in the East?
Yes, and I think they're going to win 48 games, provided Butler is healthy and provided that Wade plays in 70% of the games. If any one of those two doesn't happen, if Butler, you know, has a major injury, or God forbid, if he misses games like he did last year, no. You know, they'll be 38 to 42, 40 wins. But I'm bullish on this team. I think McDermott's going to take a step. I love Valentine. I think Nico improved a lot last year. And you know,
I think Porter, you see him in summer league?
In the wash. I mean, I'm ready to rock and roll, and I hope everybody wants to get on board. Hey, man, I got to hit the ground running. We've done 50 minutes already.
Yes, look, we are bullish about this team. I'm excited about this season, and I just don't understand what people would have expected. I mean, when people are putting the Hawks, who lost Teague, they lost Horford, you're replacing them with a Dwight Howard that scored 11 points a game last year. How are people, every single thing that I'm reading, people are putting the Hawks in the top, like, 3-4 of the East, and it's like, what the heck?
Okay.
It's as if people do not even consider the fact that we got Dwayne Wade, who is coming off of the best season that he's played last year in the last 5 years. And he's been good the last 5 years. It's only, obviously, he misses games. But he'd always made the playoffs, and then he'd play in the playoffs. And it's just, in my personal opinion, if Dwayne Wade plays 25 minutes a goddamn night, even if we win the same amount of games that we won last year, I am way more confident with this team with Dwayne Wade going in the playoffs than we had last year. And it's
Let me make a prediction now. If the Bulls surprise a lot of people, not surprise me, but they win 48-49, get to the second or third round of playoffs and put the fear of God in the Cavs. I could see us going in the direction of the Celtics. In the offseason, 2017, we pick up Paul Millsap to be our starting power forward, and now we're cooking with gas. Then you got...
Well, why are you discounting? Everybody discounts their young talent. Why are we discounting Bobby Portis? This is his second year in the league. Why are we discounting these players that we are counting on who will play? You know, Portis had an amazing offseason. He had an amazing summer camp. Why are we saying Nico and Portis and Valentine? Why are we automatically saying that our young talent has no upside?
We're not saying that. I think what we're saying is, obviously, the starters are going to be the vets, and then the core of our bench are going to be young guys, and there's nothing wrong with that. And if things go south, then you trade the vets and you go young. And I think everybody who watches the Bulls should feel good about Valentine, should feel good about Portis. I feel good about McD. I mean, there's these guys, this is a not a bad young core. Especially
we have talent.
Weren't, you know, lottery picks. You know, Portis wasn't a lottery pick. Valentine wasn't a lottery pick. You know, McDermott was, but, you know, through a trade. But I think this is not as,
no,
not
11.
As terrible to any good young team out there, any good young core out there. So I'm on board with all these guys, man. And I think we're in agreement here for once, which is a good thing. But,
yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait.
Me too.
It's different.
I can't wait too. Yeah.
It's exciting, and I hope to get, listen, Rajon Rondo will be playing with the fire of God under him because he realizes that this is, if whatever mark you make in the league at this point is going to be defined by what you do from this point forward. Because you've had enough Michigas go on in the last handful of years that it's like, okay, you had that Boston aspect of your career, but people have already kind of written them off. If Rajon Rondo can prove to be a quality point guard, which nobody recognized him because he was on a terrible team last year. He led the league in assists. The question, you know, Rose, who averaged, what, 5 assists last year? Rondo averaged almost 12.
4-7, 11-7. It's basically 7 assists a game. It's from one of the best point guards. He led the league in assists, Rondo,
He led the league.
He was one of the worst point guards as far as assists go. Hey, you know what? Sometimes when you get near the end of your career like Rondo is and like Wade is, you're on the other side of the hump. And you see the end in the distance. Sometimes you can do great things. Sometimes it makes you realize you don't have that much time left, and you better take advantage of what you have now. Sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes you hit the end quicker than you think. But I think these guys have enough left in the tank to make some miracles and make some exciting things happen in Chicago. And I'm glad they went in this direction. So
yeah, we're not shooting from downtown in this. Rajon Rondo led the league in assists. And everybody's like, oh, wait, you're just assuming the best. It's like, absolutely not.
I
don't really get assists.
I love the argument that they just wrote. Oh, those are all empty assists. Okay, yeah. They all didn't count. They all happened when every assist.
Yeah, but Schroeder's missing a game on the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, every season, every assist that Rondo had happened in the last 3 minutes when the Kings were down by 40. That's what every assist was. It's such a stupid argument. It's so dumb. I can't stand some of the negativity. People are just looking for reasons to hate the team because they hate the management and they love Tibbs and they look
and they want us to rebuild.
Fine. Yeah, so
and they love Tibbs. You're right. They love Tibbs.
They want to.
That's a big part of it.
I'm looking forward to watching Tibbs. If he doesn't change, he definitely deserves to fall and flat on his face. If he's going to treat his talent like he did some young talent here in Chicago, I want him to fall on his face.
Well, he can't in Minnesota. There's too much young talent. You just can't do it. You don't have a choice.
Yes, what do you mean? You can absolutely play those guys into the ground.
Oh, yeah, into the ground. But it's like, you know, here, he didn't even play his young talent. Like, he didn't let them develop. You have to do that in Minnesota. There's no choice.
People get this mixed up. I understand he's a great coach. He's one of the best there is. To me, it's unforgivable.
I disagree with that, but go on.
No, I think he is. He's clearly a great coach, and he'll make the
Timberwolves
better. He'll make the Timberwolves better. What he sacrifices, he takes his players, and he sacrifices years out of their careers in order to get extra wins in the regular season. I think that's wrong. That's my only point. You can argue with me. It's a fact. He did that to Jakeem Noah. Jakeem's Noah career. It's going to prematurely end because of how he was treated by his coach in Chicago in 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014. It's a fact.
Agreed.
So
agreed.
You can argue with me all day, but I'm right and you're wrong. All right, my man. I got to hit the road. Have a great
weekend. For sure, Freddie.
You too, buddy. Hey, until next time. I mean, next time we're going to have some Bulls games going on. I can't wait. If it ain't Bulls.
It ain't basketball.
Cool.